The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Kyle Idleman identifies the one thing Jesus wants you to never forget: when your way isn't working.
Waking up, focusing on what do I need to get done today? How can I be productive today? And by the way, the things I was focused on were good things. They were God things.
Sure.
But if you're focusing on production at the expense of connection, I don't think God's interested in it. He wants it to be connection, and then out of the connection to Jesus for production to come.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Great to have you here today. And I'm excited because someone who's been on the program many times, good friend of the ministry, is back with me. Kyle Idleman is here. And Kyle is now, has been for several years, the senior pastor up at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And I just found out something interesting, which is that he became senior pastor just a few months before COVID. And that's got to be like the cruelest thing ever for a pastor.
You know, I like to think that my predecessor didn't do it on purpose, but he timed it just right. Like, he left and handed things over, and then everything just kind of fell apart.
So your book is called When Your Way Isn't Working, and I know that it's not about COVID, you know, but sometimes plans just don't work out, do they?
Yeah. Well, a lot of that came from a season as a pastor of watching people put their hope in things that didn't work the way they thought they would, right? Whether that was politics or medicine, science or relationships. Like during that season of COVID, frankly, you saw people dealing with discouragement in ways that they never had before, feeling frustrated and angry, feeling worn out and tired. So some of it came from just watching that pastorally and trying to walk with people in that. And then some of that ended up being much more personal, probably more so than any book of mine that you and I've talked about. This book has more personal journey to it, where I recognized in myself some things that I was seeing in other people as a pastor and realized, okay, I need to follow some of my own counsel. I need to step back in some ways and focus in on my connection with Jesus in a deeper way. And so for me, the book ended up being more, when I wrote When Your Way Isn't Working, it was supposed to be like other people's way. It wasn't supposed to be like when my way's not working. But God has a way of doing that, right? Before you can make it about other people, He makes it about you. And so the book is a response, both personally and pastorally.
So it should be when my way isn't working.
You know, a little bit
of truth in that.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to admit that as a pastor. You're supposed to have everything together.
If I thought that's what it was going to be, I'm not sure I would have written it. But
but seriously, I think it's very healthy for you to be open about it, and not, you know, let people tend to put you up on a pedestal anyway as a pastor. And it's not that you're trying to knock that down, but the transparency here, I mean, that's really what helps people the most.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the interest of transparency, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so, you know, I talk in the book about having a friend who said to me, I'd already started writing this book, but he saw some things in me, and he just said, "You haven't been yourself lately." And he said, "I've got this friend you should go see. He's an executive coach." And I'm like, okay, well, you know, maybe I should go visit an executive coach. That sounds like an important thing. And I get into this first session with an executive coach. And I'm like, oh, you're a therapist. Like, you just call yourself an executive coach. So people like me, you know, will call and ask for help. And so that experience of having someone say, "Hey, I see some things right now. You seem more discouraged," or for me, it was being more tired, a little bit more irritable. You know, my wife said to me during that season, she said, "You know, you are not an easily offended person. So one of the things I love about you is you're not easily offended. I can tell you're just more sensitive." And so there were these things that a few people around me noticed, and I'm thankful that I had those kinds of friendships and that kind of relationship with my wife where they could say early on, "Hey, once you step back and take a breath and look at some things, and then this book really was a challenge to myself and then to others in those seasons. How do you connect with Jesus and how do you connect with people more deeply? Like when your way isn't working and you're frustrated about it and you're worn out and just discouraged, like what you don't always feel like doing is what you most need to do. And that is, you know, connect to Jesus more deeply and connect with other people who will help you do that.
Right.
So,
yeah, well, okay. I want to get into the disconnection, but first I have to ask you one little thing, because most of us don't want to admit that this is going on with us. And that's just pride. Let's mm-hmm. be honest. It actually takes humility for you to say, I'm thankful I had people in my life that could spot that, could kind of call me out and help. Was there any struggle, any temptation to go, no, look, everything's good. I'm just going to, let's just hide that. I'll do better on my own.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, Randy, because honestly, if I hadn't already started this, I'm not sure I would have sat down and made it part of the story. I saw this in other people, and I cared pastorally about connecting them more deeply to Jesus in that season. And then God worked it out so that I could speak out of the overflow of my own life. Mm. And as you say, like that, even though we don't ask for that and we don't want it,
right.
I recognize that that's also what God often uses to connect His word to people.
Well, yeah. I mean, people that have been through horrible things can empathize with people who are going through the same similar
yeah.
horrible things. And so in a way that we usually don't want,
right.
ministry can be born out
yes.
of that.
Let's
talk about some of those disconnecting things. You mentioned some things, you know, anxiety, fatigue. How do we know, well, one, when we're disconnected from God, and two, when we're really disconnecting from people that we should be connected to?
Yeah. What helped me was to recognize like input versus output. Like if I am very much focused on always doing, always giving on the output side of things, and I'm not really paying attention to input, mm-hmm. what I'm giving my heart to, my mind to, my time to, then that is a pretty good indicator that at some point something's going to give. My way's not going to work. The way I talk about it in the book is the more external input we receive, the less internal reflection we do. And so when I'm always getting distracted with what's happening in the news or what's on my phone or stress at work or, you know, what I would talk about as being it's always a busy season. You know, if you've said it's always a busy season for years, it's not a busy season, it's your life,
yeah.
right? And so those distractions can easily become indicators of disconnection. And learning to recognize those and then being more intentional with connection rhythms. So for me, that was taking time every morning and making sure my connection to Jesus was right rather than focusing on the production of the day.
Mm.
And I just had gotten into this habit of waking up, focusing on what do I need to get done today? How can I be productive today? And by the way, the things I was focused on were good things. They were God things.
Sure.
But if you're focusing on production at the expense of connection, I don't think God's interested in it. He wants it to be connection and then out of the connection to Jesus for production to come.
So kind of a vine and branches thing is what
yeah.
I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's the book, right? Like that's the book is John 15, verse 5, where Jesus says, I'm the vine and you're the branches. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you'll bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can't do anything. Apart from me, you're going to experience this frustration of things not going your way.
If you've ever looked at one of these, you see that you've got the vine here and the fruit here and the branch in between, right?
Right.
And if we're only looking at the fruit, which is good fruit, which is what we're supposed to produce, we're not looking the other way at mm-hmm. the vine. But if we just focus on the vine over here, you don't even have to look. It's just going to fruit.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, we are guilty of that.
Yeah.
Especially because a lot of preachers, not you, of course, but they preach on fruit.
Yeah. Yes. And again, it's as you say, it's good.
Like, it is.
Fruit's good. I think if I could take that a step further, I think a lot of people who are, you know, growing up in the church, been around faith their whole lives, they will sometimes think that producing fruit is necessary for connection, that the way I earn connection with the vine is by producing fruit. And that's not...
It's backwards.
It's backwards. Yeah. It's connection and then production. But when we get focused on the production over connection, then that suffers.
Do you think that's why Jesus pulled back and went up to the mountain sometimes?
Yeah, Mark chapter 1. I love this. When Jesus is early in the morning, he goes off by himself. The whole town is outside the house waiting for him, and they all have expectations of him. And then Jesus says to his followers after spending time with God, actually, we're going to go to the next town, and we're going to preach there. In other words, I'm not going to do what everybody wants me to do today. Right. I'm not here to meet other people's expectations. I'm here to do what God has called me to do. And so that connection that he modeled there led to a different kind of production than what everybody else was interested in.
Well, I think a lot of people need to hear that.
Yeah.
Because it's real easy to get caught up in other people's expectations. One thing you do have to do when you realize that your success coach is is your shrink.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
And when you really, when you realize maybe that I've allowed some things to get out of order, not intentionally, not out of bad motive. It's just, you know, my way isn't working, as your title says, right?
Yeah.
There's an element, I think, that you talk about in your book that is of surrender that feels like I'm not doing something, but is most often the biggest and the hardest and most important step. Mm-hmm. What does surrender look like to you?
Well, you know, Jesus in John 15 uses the word remain, or translated also as abide. Mm-hmm. I think it shows up like 11 times in a handful of verses. And that's a hard word because it doesn't give us a task list. Like, abiding doesn't feel very successful. Like, if I'm abiding, it doesn't seem very tangible. Like, what do I have to show for it, right? Like, and so recognizing the reality of that, that abiding in Jesus is resting in him. Here's a way to think about it. When I come home from work and it's a nice evening, I see the lawn needs to be mowed, but I also know I could go for a walk with my wife. I love walking with my wife, but the lawn needs to be mowed. I will tend, you know, just instinctively to want to get the grass cut, not because I like it more. I'd rather go for a walk with my wife. But when I'm done cutting the grass, I have something to show for it. I can point to it and say, hey, look what I got done. Yeah. But over time, the abiding, over time, the walking with my wife and connecting and remaining close that way, it bears a lot more fruit than mowing the grass. But in the moment, I'm almost always drawn to the immediate, I check it off my list. And spiritually, remaining calls us to take the walk.
Well, you're back to the disconnect, the importance of relationship over productiveness. And that's the wrong word, probably, but relationship over the doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a Martha and Mary thing. It's there's a lot of good busy things we could be doing, and they're not all just busy work. They're legit things.
Yeah,
they're legit needs out there, right? People are hungry. We need to feed them, but there has to be that time. What did you learn as you started to apply that very principle? What was the fruit of that?
You know, I would say part of the fruit is sustainability. Mm-hmm. You know, when you focus on the production, when you focus on the Martha side of things, to use your illustration, like, that works okay for a while, but it doesn't last. If you want to bear fruit for the long haul, mm-hmm. then the connection is what really matters. It's sitting at the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so recognizing the need to be disciplined and intentional with that. And then for me, you know, getting rid of some of those distractions. You know, I'm 47. Having to let someone else look at my screen time for accountability to make sure I'm not on some, you know, watching YouTube information news channel, like, that's a humbling thing. I don't want to have to do that. I feel like I should be beyond that. But I know that if I'm going to remain and abide in Jesus the way he's called me to, I've got to be intentional to get rid of some of these other distractions.
How did that impact the relationships when you, the people that had said, we've got our concerns, mm-hmm. what happened with those?
Yeah. So one of the things I did, I don't remember who suggested this to me, but as I reached out to some of the people who were closest to me and I said, hey, I would love for you to give me three or four things that you see in my life that I really need to work on. And I pushed them on it. I said, look, I know you love me. I know you want to be encouraging to me. I'm asking you right now to be really honest.
Did they give you these real surfacey things at first?
Oh, I prepared them for that. Like, I know this is what you want.
Right.
And so they didn't. You know, they wrote it out. And I had three or four pages of things from 10 or 12 different people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My wife could probably do three or four pages just off the top of her head.
Yeah, I told them, you know, give me three or four things, and my wife did not follow that rule. Like, she had a few more. She had a few extra, but that she has the right to do that. But I read through all of those things thinking, like, that would be discouraging, that would be difficult. But what I experienced was the opposite. I mm-hmm. felt loved. I felt cared about. I didn't feel... criticized. I felt cared for. And so I think, well, when Jesus says, I'm the vine, he says, you're the branches. It's not singular, you're the branch. It's branches, that we're meant to be intertwined. Mm. We're meant to be connected to him together, and branches support one another and hold each other up. And I certainly experienced that.
So how are you with your discouragement, your fatigue, your anxiety, your frustration?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting for me is my body will tell me these things are present before my emotions.
Funny how God made us that way.
It is, yeah. Because I don't feel, if you ask me, even during some of the craziness of COVID, like, I'm not easily discouraged. I rarely ever feel discouraged. I don't feel anxious. I rarely feel anxious. But I won't be sleeping as well, but I'm a little shorter or more irritable with somebody. And so I have to pay attention to some of those things more than what I would say I feel emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so if I'm not sleeping well and I'm not taking good care of myself physically, it's usually an indication that, okay, there's some things I'm anxious about. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't have seen it that way, or some things I'm discouraged about and I need to recenter and abide in Jesus more intentionally.
Has this resonated with your congregation?
Yeah. You know, I've talked to them a little bit about it this past weekend of, you know, just being honest and saying, I wish I had all of these things figured out, but the part of the journey is that we're to one degree or another, always experiencing the reality of our way not working and needing to walk in a constant state of surrender, humbling ourselves, remaining, and let's do that together as a church.
And we have that great promise that if we're tired, we're weighed down, Jesus says, come to me. He says, I'll give you rest. And it sounds like you've walked that out, and it's good.
Yeah, it is good.
We appreciate you guys. In fact, we appreciate you so much that we're going to invite you to do something very, very good right now. Watch this and you'll see how you can be a blessing in someone else's life this Christmas season.
You know, Betty, all these people have wondered why we're here. How are you? And we have told them through translators that we are here because we love them and because we want to give them a better life. We came in the name of the Lord Jesus. But we didn't just come to talk about God's love. We came to share it and demonstrate it. You know, I'm kneeling here in Central America by a contaminated water source, and we love to give water wells. We found out something else because of contaminated water. And even contaminations and problems in the soil, children get little cuts in their feet and they pick up hookworms. And as I understand it, that ultimately gets into their intestines and is a horrible sickness. But it's a disease that not only brings incredible pain and discomfort, but in so many instances, death.
You know, I'm standing here with these children, and they're just a small example of children all over the world that they deserve to be cared for. And we have an opportunity to do that right now, to put some shoes on their feet, to give them a chance in life. And I ask you to help us do that. It's just a simple request, but a very urgent and important one. Please join with us. You'll get such great joy out of it. I know you will. God bless you. Thank you.
Many years, my parents saw the need for something as simple as a pair of shoes. And so we've been doing this for many years now. I was told we passed, I think it was 2.5 million pairs of shoes. That's amazing. It's only been possible because of the love of people just like you. And we're doing it again. There's still a great need for shoes. Oftentimes, it's the first pair of shoes that a child has ever received, which is hard for us to imagine here in the West. But not only does it put a smile on their face, make them happy, sometimes they jump around and dance and sing in joy, and that's a beautiful thing. But there is the very real health concern that bare feet can present some health risks, and we've seen some really difficult to look at things. I'll be nice, because sometimes when you see these images of feet and toes that have suffered from just being exposed, it's not a pretty thing. But this outreach, Christmas Shoes and Smiles, it is a beautiful thing. And I know it's early. I don't think about Christmas until the week before. My wife is great about thinking about Christmas year-round, but we're thinking about Christmas here early in the year because we want to be able to say to our mission partners on the ground, shoes are on their way, and it takes time to get them there. So that's why we're talking about this early. Now listen, $36 will provide 10 pairs of shoes. That's 10 children that will receive a beautiful, long-lasting pair of shoes. They will likely outgrow them and have to hand them down before they wear out. We see this over and over. A gift today of $72 will provide 20 pairs of shoes. That's 20 children that will receive shoes. Some of you could give $180 and provide shoes for 50 children. Whatever you can do, many of you could do much more than that, and I would ask you to consider it. The point is that if we come together right now, early in the season, we can make Christmas so special for so many people. And if you'll do it today, we've got some wonderful gifts for you. We've got these shoe ornaments. You can hang on your tree, hang around your house, and remind yourself, oh yeah, a few months ago I made that gift, and now some child that I don't know is receiving a pair of shoes, but God knows that child, and God knows that they are feeling that love from somewhere, and we always do this in the name of Jesus. And that child is smiling today because I made that gift. Will you be that one to put shoes and smiles on children's feet and faces? That child is smiling because I made that gift. You will know that. And you know, whether you're giving the child shoes and that makes them smile, or you're giving them a corrective surgery that enables them to smile, you are having an impact. So I would ask you to go to the phone or go online, make the best gift you can. If you can give an entire surgery, do that. Let's all come together and make this Christmas special for so many children as they feel the love of Christ at Christmas time.
Poverty is a killer, and because of it, children needlessly suffer, not only from a lack of food and clean water, but also from a lack of things we often take for granted, like a simple pair of shoes. Far too many children living in extreme poverty have never owned a new pair of shoes, and while that may seem minor in light of all their needs, walking with bare feet puts them at risk of life-threatening infections and disease that could lead to crippling consequences, and even death. By responding today, you will help secure and make ready 150,000 pairs of Christmas shoes to be shipped and delivered to children around the world just in time for the holidays. Your gift of $36 will help provide 10 pairs of shoes. A gift of $72 will help provide 20 pairs. And a gift of $180 will help provide 50 pairs of Christmas shoes for children in need. As a thank you for your gift of support, be sure to request the beautifully crafted green crystal shoes ornament, a treasure to display at each Christmas. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request this keepsake boxed set featuring three of life's crystal Christmas shoe ornaments. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help provide over 275 pairs of shoes or two children with corrective cleft lip or palate surgeries. With this gift, you may request the beautiful bronze sculpture Consider the Birds. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I love this moment. I love it. No child should ever have to play around, walk around without a pair of shoes, something that is good for them, something that will protect them, not just their feet, but their entire life. This is where they play. This is where they walk. This is where they live. There's nails. There's metal. And when you live in these places, it's not like you can rush to a clinic right away. Their medical care is not like mine. So what a privilege it is to come in here and give them something that I know will keep them safe. So as you are prayerfully considering giving, please remember that we also have a ministry where we are changing the smiles of little ones as well who have been born with cleft lip or cleft palate. So don't forget that today. Christmas shoes and smiles. Thank you so much for your giving. It all matters. Go online or call that number today and give the best gift you can.
Yay!
I hope you will make a difference in a child's life this Christmas season. We're thinking about it early because we want to have everything ready for them. And your response today will make that possible. So make the best gift you can. And by the way, we have a gift for you. If you will request Kyle Idleman's book, When Your Way Isn't Working, we will send it to you with any gift towards the outreach. Kyle, thank you for your transparency.
Yeah.
Thank you for blessing others. We just appreciate what you do.
Thanks, brother.
What's your website for people who want to follow up with you?
You know, you can go to KyleIdleman.com. Some good resources on there. It's a good way to connect.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you for watching. Come back. We've got more encouragement for you here on Life Today. We'll see you again next time.
I was speaking to her and basically felt so far from God, and she saw something in the room over me.
Anthony Evans shares his experience in therapy with Stacy Kaiser. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.